Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's topic is actually a client highlight featuring Heidi. And with her, we're working on rehabbing some hip injuries and also working on strength training specifically for powerlifting. So Heidi and I first met and started working together in August of 2017. And the goal was to address pains she was having in her hips related to like squats and deadlifts and whatnot. But then she also wanted to kind of do powerlifting. So she was having some pains and some difficulties that was actually kind of making her question whether she could continue to lift and continue to strength train. But at the same time, as while working through all those pains and experiencing all that stuff, she really wanted to test herself and see if she could be strong in the sport of powerlifting. So she had been coming over from like Olympic lifting. And that was one of the first things we addressed was typically with Olympic lifting, if somebody does like a power clean or a snatch, they're used to driving the weight off the floor, kind of like getting up under the bar and kind of crashing down into the bottom of a squat motion, using stretch reflex on all the muscles in the joints to kind of bounce themselves back to the top. So when you get somebody who comes from like Olympic lifting and CrossFit world, typically they have very little control of their eccentric portion of the squat, meaning that once they think they're in the right kind of position, like they walk the bar out, like say squats for example, they're going to walk the bar out, kind of get their feet set, and then it looks like they just fall down. So they bend their knees and their hips, they kind of go crashing down to the bottom, they bounce out of whatever the hell is going to catch them, and they try to drive their way back up out of that. And that's one of the main reasons why a lot of CrossFitters, Olympic lifters will have hip pain, is because they're essentially just kind of like bottoming out all of their connective tissues and all the musculature around that joint and hoping that everything's kind of equal side to side and everything kind of catches with all the muscles involved, all catching their appropriately equal percentage. And you can tell by the language of that that that's highly unlikely. It works for a little while, but then eventually people kind of, especially in the world of CrossFit, you do so many crazy movements that eventually you're going to get kind of like an imbalance from side to side. And then all of a sudden when you crash down into the bottom of the squat, there isn't an equal amount of pressure everywhere, and you start tugging on the tight things, and the loose things never get fully involved, so they get kind of weak, and then the system starts to break down and become imbalanced. And a lot of that can cause the pain that people experience in their squats. So if you are a kind of crash dive squatter, and you kind of just drop to the bottom, hope stuff catches you and drive your way back up, and you're experiencing hip pain, this podcast is for you, so you can hear about the things we did with Heidi and how we were able to address them and fix them for her. Hopefully it'll help for you as well. And then also, if you're not that type of squatter, it might just be fun to listen and learn about what proper movements can help in terms of building long-term strength and reducing overall pain. So the first thing we did with her squat was to slow down her eccentric. So we created a pattern of setup cues that she goes through every single time she squats, whether it's an empty bar all the way up to her one rep max. She goes through these cues and she squats the exact same way every freaking time, no exceptions. So when we exchange videos, when we're talking together online, that's the first thing I look for is, was she in control of her positioning the entire way through the squat? So, and sometimes we'll see it where she might kick her hips back and bend her knees kind of all too rapidly, and her midsection will get like loose, causing like a kink in the lower back, and then that can ruin her strength and also cause hip pain. Or if she goes too fast, she's not able to brace herself properly at parallel, and she'll drop 2 or 3 inches below parallel, bottom out on everything. So that's the first thing we look for. And then also going too fast tends to shift people onto their toes. And when you're on your toes, you're not going to be maximizing your hamstrings and glutes and lower back involvement. And you're pulling unevenly through the hip structure, then that can cause pain as well, and also just limited strength. So we slowed down her eccentrics, we got rid of the balance, and we used positional tightness. So as she would get down to parallel, she was bracing and holding her hips tight, so that way she could explode from the parallel, rather than just kind of like crash into parallel and try to bounce up. We did that through paused squats, and also slowed eccentrics, with varying speeds to the eccentrics. So for example, some of her early workouts, she might have had work up to like a set of 3 where you have a 5 count descent. So on the way down, she goes out, gets her feet set. As soon as she starts her squat, it's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then she'd be at parallel, then she explodes up. And then we would kind of have her add a little more weight, go to a 4 count, add a little more weight, go to a 3 count, add a little more weight, go to a 2 count. So we would make her use the lighter weights, more controlled, to feel and find what hip tightness was and where parallel really was. And that helped her over time to define a proper movement mechanics for powerlifting, where she was keeping her hips braced, hitting parallel, but not being loose anywhere and not going lower than parallel, lower than what was needed. So paused squats and slowed eccentrics with varying speeds really helped a lot. And then some of the cues we worked on was splitting the floor with your feet. So once your feet are set for your squat, like you walk the bar out, your feet are set, as you bend your knees, you want to try to rip the floor apart with your feet. So if you were staying on two rugs and you're trying to slide the rugs apart from each other, so like doing like a split, for example, that was what we wanted her to do with her feet. That helps you brace your hips. And then with her knees, Heidi has a very long, tall, long physique, and her squat width is only about as wide as her shoulders. So she's not a super wide squatter, and that's because we were trying to protect her hip. So she was coming into us with hip pain. So therefore, when we were setting up her programming, the goal was to make her hips a supportive part of her squat, but they're not going to be the main movers or the main stable of stability and control. So instead, we kind of kept her with a feet shoulder width apart and made her quads, hamstrings, glutes, and low back be the bracers. And her hips are definitely braced during the squat. They're tight, but they're not trying to catch all of the weight. We decided to make her squat form have it where the hamstrings would catch the weight rather than her hip sockets just kind of bottoming out. So you'll see that more with people who squat knee wraps and or suits and gear and stuff, where their feet are much wider and they go down into where their hip bone, like their femur, their upper leg bone, basically just kind of bottoms out in the hip socket, and they would have to snap their leg out of place if they went any lower. So they'll use that leverage to kind of push them back up. And for some people that works great. For the majority of people, that's really unhealthy on your hips. And within a 2 or 3 year span of doing it like that, almost everybody runs into hip problems. So you can't just bottom out on a joint, you know, with 600, 700, 800 pounds in your back and expect that joint not to argue. So by us keeping a narrower stance, she was able to deload the bottoming out or the end range usage of her hip. And that really helped us keep her healthy and strong. And part of that, like I said, was splitting the floor with her feet, keeping her knees over top of her feet, so not letting her knees crash down, like crash inward on the way down. So she had to push her knees apart, but only enough to keep them in line with the feet. We don't want her knees going outside of her feet. So it was just enough to keep her in proper alignment, and then as she would push up, she would try to push her knees out as well, and that helped her maintain more glute, lower back, and upper hamstring involvement, and rather than having the squat be all quads. So those were some things we did for her squat. And then also we slowed down all the setup cues, like I said, to reduce kind of body weight shift throughout the squat, not letting her go forward or backward. No one really goes backward. People mostly just go into their toes. So that's what we did to control that, was just making her go slower with those pause squats and varying speed eccentrics. Now, with her bench press, Heidi was already really good at bench press, and there was obviously no hip pain related to her bench press. Now, some people with certain arches or certain types of leg drive, they will run into hip pain. But for Heidi, she has a very flat back kind of bench press. But to give you an idea, she weighs around 140, and she benches 187 in her recent competition. So she's a good bencher. So really with that, we just let her keep the wide hand position, so that way she can use a chest-driven bench press. And she focuses on lat tightness throughout the press. So on the way down, she really flexes the hell out of her lats and her mid-back, and that gives her the resistance to the weight, so that way when the weight comes down, it doesn't crash onto her, or it doesn't come down so fast that she's bouncing and bobbling on her chest, waiting, you know, 10 years for a press command. So we wanted to have lat tightness and mid-back tightness on the way down, so you're just flexing the hell out of your back as the bar lowers down. And then she focuses on a leg punch, so not a leg drive, where somebody pushes through their legs and they continue to push, which can often cause their butt to rise up. Her job is to just get a punch. So as soon as she goes to press the bar off her chest, she just punches through her heels, and that gives her power through her whole body and gives that one shock kind of punch power into her press. And like I said, it works pretty good. She benched 187 at 140-some pounds, so pretty awesome. And then, and also what makes it more impressive is she's crazy tall and long, so she has really long arms for her bench press, which makes it even more impressive. Now, part of her deadlift, which would involve hip stress, is we made sure we stayed with conventional versus sumo. So, and again, part of that is because we want to take the end range tension off the hips, and we want to put it more so into the quads, hamstrings, glutes, and lower back, more the musculature rather than the joint. So that was a big thing for us, was keeping her conventional. And again, she has feet right under her hips, so it's a very narrow stance conventional. And our goal was to learn how to settle her body weight into her heels before she would push off the floor. So rather than getting excited, kind of dropping the hips but driving through the toes, she has to drop her hips, wait a second, let her body weight settle into the heels, then drive very hard. And we would still want some quad pressure through that drive, but by being back on her heels before she drives, that ensures that the hamstrings are maximally involved immediately right off the floor. So then as the bar comes up her shin, she's going to drag that bar through her shins, like she's trying to rip the bar through her legs. That's going to, again, going to keep her body weight back and keep her hamstrings engaged. And then as the bar gets closer to the knees, she focuses on squeezing her glutes and driving her hips towards the bar. She's not going to pull through her lower back trying to raise the bar to her. She's going to try to drive through her glute muscles to shove her hip structure forward to meet the bar. So she deadlifts over 300 pounds at 147 pounds body weight. So that bar isn't coming to her. She has to go to it. So as the bar passes her knees, she squeezes the hell out of her glutes and upper hamstrings to drive her hips towards the barbell. And that's going to give her the best lockout. Now that she's getting stronger, she just deadlifted 340 in her last meet at 140-some pounds. The next cue we have to work on is as she's driving her butt forward, she needs to also drive her belly forward. So she was getting a little bit rounded in her mid-back, and that cue will be fixed by driving her stomach forward into her belt as she's trying to drive her butt forward into the bar. So it's basically just trying to keep everything on the front side of your body shoving forward into the bar, including her belly now. So that's what we did with her deadlift. Then for her overall programming, we start every workout with stretching and kind of mobility warm-up movements, where we ensure that her body is as even as it's going to be that day in terms of muscular tightness from one side to the other. And kind of like, I meant that left to right, but it also means front to back. It all, you know, just everywhere. You want her to be as balanced as possible. So a lot of the pains that she was having when we first met that was really limiting her motion, her ability to work out, was the imbalance, which created weaknesses, and then those weaknesses were never fully isolated and brought back up to match everything else. So by stretching and having mobility warm-ups, it allows her to get her body as even as possible, so the strong muscles aren't so tight and holding on to all the tension, and the weak muscles are more primed and ready and warmed up and ready to go. So you're just trying to tell all the muscles that are too tight to loosen, all the muscles that are too loose to tighten. So you're just trying to even things out. And then we train abs all the time. So she alternates some workouts. She does plank variations of abs, which is an isometric contraction to just hold ab positioning. And then the other thing she does is contractions. So crunches and, you know, leg raises and stuff like that, ab wheel rollouts. So we alternate. Often on her lower body days, we do planks. On her upper body days, we do contractions. And that's for the abs. And then she gets into her workout. So that's every single workout we do stretching and mobility and abs. And then for her squats, like I said, we used paused squats and slowed eccentrics. But basically what we did is we kept the main work of her squatting lighter by using variations like no belt along with pauses. That's going to be very limiting on how heavy you can go. But our goal was focusing on building a set pathway and having muscular control throughout all aspects of the range of motion. So there's not a single inch of the squat that we want Heidi to be out of control. She should be able to feel muscular tightness and control and hold her positioning at any moment in the squat. So by us staying lighter in her main workload, that allowed her to develop that mental connection and the ability to stay tight throughout the entire motion. And then whenever we get closer to a meet, we throw on a belt, we get rid of the eccentrics and the pauses, then we let her try to practice those same concepts but at a faster speed and with a little more weight. and it's worked very well so far. So overall, her volume comes mostly from her accessories and her training. So her main barbell lifts are definitely a significant part of her workout, but they're by far, in a way, not even the largest part of her workout. So she has all the movement stretching stuff at the beginning, abs. We do some type of heavy barbell work. Sometimes we pre-exhaust it with the accessories, but often it's the heavy strength-based work. And then she goes into accessories. And if we had to kind of break down her training, her heavy barbell work might be like a fifth of her training, so about 20%. And the rest of it comes from accessories and other movements that are intended to focus on not only her weaknesses, but also focus on her strengths, but allow her to train her strengths without annihilating and beating the crap out of her weaknesses. So sometimes people say, I want to get stronger for squatting, so they just squat super heavy. But in order to do that, you're pissing off a lot of your weaker stuff. And it's better for you to isolate that out and say, if you have, you know, strong quads and you want to keep them strong, go do a hack squat or a narrow stance leg press rather than trying to squat heavy all the time. So that allows you to isolate out the hips, isolate out the low back, and you can really maximize your quad involvement but not annoy the crap out of everything else. And having those small annoyances keep holding you back in training and progression. So it's important to realize that you get stronger by building the pieces of the puzzle, not just focusing on the puzzle itself. So you can get a squat stronger by working on your quads, your hamstrings, glutes, and lower back, but it doesn't mean you have to do them all at once. So I can just do something for quads, I can just do something for hamstrings, just for glutes, just for lower back, then you put them all together when you squat. So that's the idea of accessory work, is to make sure you work on your weaknesses and strengths, but make sure they don't cause collateral damage to each other. So you don't want to only work on your weaknesses and let your strong things become weak, and you don't want to work on your strengths at the cost of recovery and ability to work on those weaknesses. So it's an important balance. So like I said, Heidi and I started in about August of 2017, I think towards the end of August, and her first meet with me, like her first meet ever actually, was April 2018. So we took those months, I think that would be like, what, 6 months or so, 6 or 7 months to build up all these healthy patterns and to get rid of pain. So by that time, like in April, when she was working out, she wasn't having pains that were limiting her and causing life issues, like she wasn't in pain at work or in pain while, you know, doing chores around the house. So we were pain-free except for normal recovery from workouts. So we did our first meet. She did an awesome job. She got a 721 total. So powerlifting meets are in kilograms, by the way, which is why it's a weird number in pounds. But she got a 721 total, and she just competed in her third powerlifting meet this past weekend, actually yesterday, and she got an 814-pound total. So in the process of about 7-8 months since her last meet, she added 93 pounds to her total. And we could have done more, but the important part that we're working for is we want to get to a 380-kilogram qualifying total for USAPL Nationals next year. So we're kind of incrementally pushing our way up. So you can hear, like, she got a 93-pound increase from her very first meet. So we've just been making small little meet PRs. You're just putting everything together piece by piece by piece. There's no need to push the limits of our injuries or weaknesses for a small kind of intermediate step-by-step meets. Now, if we go to Nationals, we might want to push our limits a little bit and see where we can rank. But again, she's doing this as a way to motivate herself to work on rehab and rehabilitation and become strong for life. So we don't want to, at the cost of some random powerlifting meet, cause that to go backwards. So even if we're USAPL Nationals, even if she has a chance to win first place, but we think that the potential to do that would cause risk for her for the rest of her life, then clearly we're not going to go for that. So we want healthy, happy people for life, not just happy on one day and then pissed off and miserable for the rest of your life and always having these, you know, one day I did this stories as you can't even tie your shoes. So we want to make sure that we're great for life, not great for one day. So that's our goal. So you can hear, like, some people don't like that in a sense to where it sounds like you're holding back all the time, or it's kind of like that slow and steady wins the race. They don't want to be the turtle. They want to be the rabbit, you know, the hare. So they want to kind of go balls to the wall and go hardcore. That's not the right way. That is not strong. Being mentally strong is knowing what is the right pace and sticking to it. Being mentally strong isn't trying to be apeshit crazy and try to go nuts on one day. That is actually a mental weakness. You are a weak human being if you can't learn how to slow yourself down and have delayed gratification. So if you go all nuts for some kind of record or, you know, whatever, and it costs you your body and it costs you a significant portion of recovery and whatnot, that's not being tough. That's not being mentally strong. You're weak. It's mentally stronger and more difficult to do it step by step, slow and steady, and do it the right way. So remember that. Focus on that. Doing things at the right pace, the optimal pace, that is true discipline. That is being truly strong. Knowing how to maintain a consistent, controllable pace rather than going balls to the wall. So that was everything we did for Heidi. So we addressed the small things. We don't hide from them. We don't hide from our weaknesses. We don't hide from technical flaws. We point everything out. We nitpick the hell out of her. But it makes sure that she builds up those perfections and those safety mechanisms over time. And then, again, we keep her strong things strong, but we do it through isolation work to make sure we don't piss off her weaknesses. And then we just focus on that slow and steady wins the race mindset. So she doesn't have to go into every meet hitting every 2.5 kilogram PR, you know, trying to get up every little pound she can. We just try to get a little bit better than the last meet. That puts us a little bit closer to the goal of the next meet. So that's overall our approach. So thank you, Heidi, for working with me, and I hope you're happy with the benefits. The results, I really am. So the most important thing is Heidi doesn't have pain now. So she doesn't have any pain other than like normal workout pains. She loves working out. She looks great. She's back to kind of enjoying her body and in seeing what it can really do. And that's the best place to be mentally. And we happen to also get strong. So she also has over an 800-pound total at 140 pounds, which is pretty awesome as well. So congratulations, Heidi, on that. Hopefully you're happy with everything. And then to anybody listening to this, hopefully you've gotten some benefits out of listening to some of these concepts, and hopefully you can apply them to your own training, and you can be in that healthy, happy place as well. So thank you for listening. If you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, Brutal Iron Gym. If you like the podcast, please share it. The more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future podcasts, let us know. The podcast is for you. So tell us what you want to learn about. You can reach out to us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.